Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, I'm Jackie Cation. You are about to listen to the Dork Forest. Let's give you the info about it. First of all, you know the websites. DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, if you like a determiner, JackieCation.com has everything. All of my podcasts, including videos of my stand-up schedule, merchandise you can purchase if you would like, and a lot more info than you possibly even need. Let's do the credits. Mike Rickberg sang and produced and composed that song at the beginning of the show. He sang with his wife, Sarah. It's very beautiful. At the end of the program, he sings his version of the Mexican Hat Dance. That's Mike Rickberg. Vilmos fixes JackieCation.com. He is the web designer over there. And Patrick Brady fixes the audio. And in this case, there's a video intro. Very exciting. Anyway, those are the websites. If you want to support the show, you're doing it already by listening to it or watching it. And another way is to tell your friends and family, go on iTunes, do a review. Another way is to just give me money. Yeah. You could go use the donate button. You can make it even monthly if you're okay with making things monthly. You do a PayPal monthly. There's a monthly choice on PayPal. The PayPal is a button on the Jackie Cation or the Dork Forest website, and it goes directly to me. Thank you very much. I will use it wisely or foolishly. Your call as well. Now, my email address, jackie@jackiecation.com, is where you can contact me if you have any questions or concerns and about the Dork Forest. And I do have a Venmo account. It's jackie-cation, oddly enough. Another way to support the show is on dorkforest.com and jackiecation.com. There's an Amazon link. And the Amazon link just takes you to Amazon. You order like normal, and it supports the show because you came from Jackie Cation or dorkforest.com. Very exciting. Other than that, there is a Bandcamp. You can, if you have listened to all the episodes that are free and you need more content, there are several live episodes that are at thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. And those cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge a couple of bucks. There's also a storytelling album there that you can listen to some stories that I did live. And there are 17 free episodes before the Dork Forest was pre-recorded. So the audio isn't very good, but the guests were super funny and fun and dorky. So if you want to do that, go to thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. Other than that, let's see if there are other things that I should be talking about. Possibly the merch. Yeah, if you want to buy merch. The only other thing I want to talk about is the merch. You can get Dork Forest t-shirts, and you can get stand-up comedy t-shirts. You can get my albums or my DVD over at jackiecation.com/merch. There's pins, there's a challenge coin, there's a bunch of new things happening over there. Anyway, a lot of information. I don't think I've missed anything, but who cares? Let's get into the show. Hey, I'm Jackie Cation. I am in my garage. Alex Edelman is wherever he is. Where are you? Are you in your apartment in New York City?
I'm in my apartment in Los Angeles. I live in Silver Lake. Silver Lake.
Oh, do you? Yes. I am going to change my name because I forgot to do it before we began. So, Alex Edelman, you guys should know, comic, been on the show before. That's right. Didn't we talk about David Foster Wallace, maybe?
We did. We talked about David Foster Wallace.
You know what I call him? George Foster Wallace. I call him George Foster Wallace all the time. I'm so wrong. I'm incorrect.
But you used to call me Max when you first met me
Josh,
for a little while.
I think Josh. It was Josh.
You called me Josh. It was right. That's right. You called me Josh.
Right. But here we are 10 years later, and I'm like, it's Alex fucking Edelman, Cation. Get it together. So Alex Edelman, you guys should know, is at Alex Edelman. Great comic, by the way, and at the Alex Edelman on Instagram. And 800 Pound Gorilla just put out your album. It just came out. It's called Until Now. You recorded it live in front of humans where you had sort of vibe, right? You had that pre-COVID vibe.
Remember that? Remember recording live in front of humans?
I do. I just signed with 800 Pound Gorilla to do my next album. We just got to find some humans and me willing to stand in front of them.
Ugh.
It's going to be great.
Acme in Minneapolis, and I'm just like, give me any, you know,
that's
give me.
The way.
Did you Where'd you do It's Never Gonna Be Bread?
All Acme, every album.
That's what I thought. That's one of my favorite albums. Not to plug your album when I should be plugging my album, right. But I love that album.
Thank you very much. And everybody should go find Alex's album Until Now, wherever albums are available, which is everywhere. You all have the chops. We know you do. But here's what I want to, we did dork out about David Foster Wallace, and I've since read some excerpts. Funny guy, smart guy.
Yeah, I think he's sort of like Jesus in that his fans have ruined him a little bit.
Oh.
Like
the Beatles. Sure.
Yeah, the Beatles. But in college, I was like, who's this smart, funny dude? And now the trope behind David Foster Wallace is that a white guy on a first date will tell you that that's who you need to be listening to.
Well, you know, and when 30 years ago, it was Hunter S. Thompson. So it's fine. Oh. It's just hipsters will, to some extent. I mean, the thing is your mind is blown by what your mind is blown by, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. If you are a straight white guy and your mind is blown... Thank God. Thank God it's blown by something. And hopefully it's not Ayn Rand, right?
Yeah, so, well, I get slightly offended sometimes when – not offended, but I'm always like, Dave Foster Wallace doesn't just belong to straight white dudes. He's really good for everyone.
Yeah. No, are you know? Kidding? Even who was just – I just read something and she loved it, he loved him, and it was – oh, my God. I'm spacing her name.
Zadie Smith?
No. It was 30 Rock.
Tina Fey.
Yeah, love it, he loves them. So middle-aged white ladies as well. So available to everyone because he's really smart and he's really funny it's good.
I found out about him because one of my professors in college was Zadie Smith, who is a sort of 40-something African British genius. And she's the one who told me about him. So I feel like I discovered him, the most non-white guy of ways.
Right. But and the thing is, I mean, there's a small, very powerful group of young white dudes who are like, I invented fun, and now you're blowing it. And you're I mean, the thing is as a woman, I have been told that men invented going out for the first time. We were the ones who said we're going to leave the cave. You want to leave the cave? Well, that's not what women do. It's not what women do. Men leave the cave. Anyway,
that's so funny.
Very silly. But what I think is interesting, now that I've brought up caves, I want to talk about your new dorkdom that I didn't know anything about, but it makes sense. Hiking and climbing and something called slot canyons, which sounds like really a great way to get laid.
Well, by the way, I love that I'm like, Dave Foster Wallace, not just for white people. And to further burnish my white guy credentials, here is Slot Canyon. It's like the next time, like, here's hiking. The next time I come on, I'll be talking about high school massacres and Applebee's buffets. Like,
here's the good news. You're going to live to be 100. You're going to get to do all the white guy things and everything else.
That's so funny.
Those are all things that everybody would love. So I think, canyons are gorgeous and I love going for a walk.
So I'm so excited to, a slot canyon is a specific, so I love hiking, but everyone loves hiking. It's like when someone puts on their dating profile, like I like to travel or I like adventure, so a slot canyon is a specific kind of canyon.
Okay.
And it's where the depth to width ratio is the canyons are very long but very narrow.
Okay.
So you can touch them on either sides and you can like reach out your arms in many slot canyons and touch both sides. So they're little sort of cracks that you can sort of squeeze your way through and maneuver your way through, and they're very specific and gorgeous, and they're really sort of native to the southwestern part of the United States.
Okay, I was going to ask for a latitude because it's so weird, like that canyon is probably at a very specific space on sort of the earth, like the way the earth tends to break and create, you know, canyons and rivers and all these things. So what's a really good one? There's like, are we talking like Grand Canyon? In the Grand Canyon, there's tiny slot canyons.
Well, I think there must be, but the best one I've ever been to is in Page, Arizona. And it's called Antelope Canyon.
Okay. I've seen it on a map.
Yeah. And it's gorgeous. And if you take the time to Google on whatever you're listening to this podcast on, if you just Google Antelope Canyon, you'll be like, what? Like, it is the quintessential one. It is gorgeous.
And it's tiny? And
it's so small. Like it's... Well, it's here's how canyons get formed. They sandstone erodes from streams and flash flooding and stuff like that. And so because of that, the width of the canyon will be the width of a stream or a creek. It's really small. And so, by the way, because of that, there are really big floods sometimes, and people can occasionally, you know, God forbid, drown in these canyons.
Okay, so but they can be dangerous to hike those canyons.
Very during a rainstorm. If it starts raining in a slot canyon, you better get yourself to open ground because they can fill with water very quickly. But slot canyons were really important to Native American tribes, and so the Navajo tribe owns Antelope Canyon. And so to get into Antelope Canyon, you need to buy a pass from the Navajo that sit at the
gate.
That sit at the gate in Page, Arizona. You need to buy a permit from the Navajo, and the Navajo guide guides you through.
Oh, so you have to go guided. Like there's no way to just sort of wander and litter.
Yeah. There's no way.
Them. Good for them. Yeah.
And it's really, really gorgeous. The Navajo name is Tsebihalini, which is the place where water runs through the rocks.
Okay.
And everything is at ground level. There's no climbing. There are a couple of sets of stairs, but you asked for the best one, the most accessible one. That is the most gorgeous one on the planet. For my money, nothing comes close. But a slot canyon is any canyon where the walls are very high.
Yep.
And it's very narrow.
And is it just through. Like, is it two people across? Is it four people across? Like how?
They differ in length, but almost every slot canyon I've ever been to has a place where it's less than one person across.
It has to be single file.
Turn to the side to squeeze through a crack.
Wow. That's cool. And now that you've brought up money, how much does it cost to get into Antelope Canyon? Do you remember? $25?
I think somewhere around that. I can't remember exactly what the cost is, but it was affordable. And when I did it.
For a guy to hang out with you for an hour? That's kind of amazing, right?
I mean, it's truly, I bet you it's closed during COVID because there's no way to do it.
Right.
While social distancing, but I know some are open, but it was $25 to get into Antelope Canyon, but there was an $8 Navajo parks fee. Again, a lot of this is on sort of desert land in the Southwest, so much of it is owned by the indigenous people from those areas because Navajo land is not an insignificant part of Arizona. So like it's really it's beautiful. The colors are insane. I put up a photo when I went. Someone went, "This looks like a Microsoft screensaver." That's because when Microsoft is making screensavers, they went into the canyon and shot five or six angles, and so five or six angles are literally screensavers for Microsoft.
Oh, that's awesome. What I need to know is it desert? Is it all just rocks and sand, or are there trees? Is there scrub brush? What's the terrain like?
So it depends. There are different canyons. Like most of the fun ones are in the desert. There's also a place called Mecca, California.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's, for me, one of the most important meccas. And there's a place called Ladder Canyon and a place called Rope Canyon in these places. And they're usually rocks. They're all rocks.
Okay.
There can be trees, but the shade cover that comes from them is from the narrowness of the canyon. And so you find yourself hiking in the shade most of the time.
I have to say that I have actually now, what is a box canyon is clearly also a canyon, but
oh,
box
yeah.
shape, right?
But is a box canyon big? There can be big box canyons, right?
Right, but a box canyon usually only has one way in and one way out. What about a slot canyon?
That's right. A box canyon is a narrow canyon with a flat bottom and vertical wall. So I think most slot canyons are also box canyon, but I think also a box canyon, there's only one way in and out, right? Like it's not. So slot canyons are almost always one long sort of through path.
And you can just get out the other end of it if you don't die in between those two spots, right?
Yeah, but you know, we just did, and some places aren't. I just like to squeeze into canyons and try to squeeze out. That's for me.
I know that sounds like that. That sounds good, though. It's that sounds nice. You like to do you climb the sides of them as well, or
so some of them have a more technical aspect. Some are real. So there's a little. This is a good secret that almost nobody knows about. If people are listening to this and they're like, I wonder where I should go, I'm about to spill some beans. But Joshua Tree has a canyon called has a hike called the Hidden Valley Hike.
Okay.
And within the Hidden Valley Hike, there's a hike called the Chasm of Doom.
Okay.
And to get into the Chasm of Doom, you have to climb. You have to find a certain entrance. I can send the I can send a photo of how to find the entrance if you want it for the page afterwards.
Well, if people followed you on Instagram, you could just post it on your Instagram.
I will. I'll post it on my Instagram.
It's the Alex Edelman. Everyone should probably know. Okay. Yeah.
It's so fun. And there's one portion of it where you have to drop 6 feet into a hole and then lie on your back and shimmy 10 feet through a narrow bit of rock called the coffin or the birth canal. And that, for some reason, I love that. Like, I miss a sense of adventure, especially now.
Okay.
And so that's why they're so important to me. There's a real sense of adventure in these because you're climbing, you're squeezing in and out of places. Sometimes you have to get on your hands and knees. Sometimes you have to lie on your back or your stomach and pull yourself through. And there's something really appealing about that. There's like an adventurousness to these canyons and hikes that you just don't get anywhere else. Like, I like to scramble over rocks and under rocks. Like, it's really fun.
That is interesting to me because it's like, I mean, what are you doing? When you're doing these things, are you also in your mind going, I'm playing Cowboys and Indians, or I am...
There's something in that.
Like a childhood cops and robbers... I'm trying to get away from the bad guys. I've been trapped here by Stanley Whiplash. Some fucking thing, right?
There's a sense of exploration is what you're talking about.
Right.
I miss exploring. Like, there's a real sense of discovering something when it's, like, right in front of you. And yeah, it's very – it's more than anything else, it's just a lot of fun. Like, yeah, the value of this for me is completely play-oriented. Like, there's real play at this.
And people should know that I am using an old-timey – I mean, calling it Cowboys and Indians.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's someone going, well, nobody's calling it that anymore, Jackie. Well, fair enough. But what I mean is when I was a child, a couple of things would happen in regard to adventure. In regard to exploring things, that we had a quarry in South Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and the people who dug the quarry, they've been, right? I mean, people who are guiding you through these tours have been to these things. But when I went as a child, I was discovering them for the first time. And it's that kind of discovery. And then I would play this thing. I would essentially there would be an imagination angle to it where I would make up some sort of dialogue or narrative or bad guys or good guys, or I was on an adventure. Right. And so when, even on a guided tour, you're going through a slot canyon or, you're shimmying on your back through the chasm of coffinness or doom,
the chasm of doom. Yeah.
And it's your own exploration. It's your own discovery of something. So I mean, everything I know about canyons and hiking, like, cause I like to walk. I don't particularly like to hike up hills and through canyons and stuff like that. But I used to walk a lot. And before I lived in the San Fernando Valley and it was 97 degrees at the time. and plus it's Los Angeles and you're like, well, if I walk somewhere, I better get a cup of coffee when I get there. And so, but the other thing that I loved, and I mostly know about canyons, is from Louis L'Amour novels, which are cowboy novels.
Yes.
From the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and 80s. I think Ronald Reagan's favorite author. It's, you know,
makes so much sense.
Yeah, yeah. And but then when he was... Our hero was consistently, not constantly, but often trapped in a box canyon or a slot canyon with water coming down fast. And he usually had to jump as high as he could take his fist, jam it into a crack in the wall, and then, and that would be the first, that would be his first handle hold, and then he could sort of muscle himself up to grab another and then get out of the canyon. Have you ever scaled a slot canyon?
Yes, but only by accident. Like, my friend David Burstein, a really funny, smart political consultant who's one of my best friends from New York, he flew to LA.
Okay.
And we drove 8 hours to Antelope Canyon. And on the way, we stopped in Mecca to go to Ladder and Rope Canyon. Mm-hmm. And David got stuck somewhere. And so to get to him, I had to climb the side of a canyon up in a way that wasn't the trail.
Right.
And so, but, and by the way, there was a real sense of danger for the first, I took a friend of mine, I took my girlfriend, into the Chasm of Doom. And afterwards, she, which is not a euphemism. And afterwards,
all of these things, yes.
She said, I would 100% not have done that if I knew what it was going to be. And I'm so glad I did it. And so that's how it feels like doing these canyons. They're like really, it's like, it's as close as you can get to scuba diving without going underwater. There are these real, there's a sense of a cave to it. And yeah, you climb in and out, and like in Ladder and Rope canyons, there are literally ropes that you have to, there's a rope that you have to climb 30 feet up to get to the next part of the trail. If you can't do it, then it's hard to get back still. Like these are fairly, like
these are advanced. Yeah.
The U.S. has some really advanced hard hiking trails, like, and some of these trails are like Angel's Peak in Zion, or the Narrows, which is also in Zion, and for my money is like the granddaddy of all slot canyons. It's got a river going along the base, so you have to hike in the river for hours with these walls on either side of you, and it's really hard and arduous and glorious. Apparently, it's my dream to go.
Okay, and this is in Zion National Park.
Yeah, and like a lot of, like, there are a lot of hikes all over the United States that are like hard. There are like really hard hikes where you could, God forbid, like really get hurt or lose your life if you're not careful. And like,
and you're like, I need to do that. When do
I get
to?
Yeah, well, there's something appealing about that. Like right now, especially, Jackie, like we both feel trapped, right? This is a pandemic. We're both like in our fucking houses, and like,
sure,
this fan has been on for for 6 weeks. I could lose my mind now, and like to risk my life, I'm dying to every day. I'm like, you know, I want to dive 100 feet into a pool now. Like that's what I miss. I miss my sense of adventure, and like this really caters to it.
You okay? Well, that this is. This, I was going to say, there are ways right now to risk your life. I don't know if you want to drive up to Portland.
And have somebody spit in my face.
You go meet some Halliburton guys that don't have any ID on them. If you would like to really risk your life. But not as pretty. Not as pretty. That's right.
No.
There's no.
Formations are different.
Rock formations are very different. And have you ever done any camping? Is there a way to stay overnight in these things, or are they mostly day activities?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I love to hike and I love adventure. Mm-hmm. I also love, with a passion I never knew I had, indoor plumbing.
Oh. And yes.
Indoor plumbing, it's one of those things you don't know that you really miss until you don't have it. And I do love my sense of adventure, and I do love to hike. And I like to camp less than I like to shower twice a day. I love showering.
Oh, and interesting. Do you shower twice a day? Do you like to shower twice a day?
Morning and night, baby.
All right. Well, it's a glorious, sweet gift. I like to bathe. I'm alone. Other people are like, you're sitting in dirty water. And I'm like, what?
That's how I feel. It's a bath of your own filth.
It's baffling to people that I like to bathe. And I like to say, then don't do it. You should totally not do it. And absolutely nobody says that I smell. So calm down.
Don't you do your best thinking in the shower or the bath? I always do my best thinking there.
One of the reasons I like to bathe is because it slows me down.
Mm-hmm,
it gives
me too.
And the thing is I will take a 20-minute bath, but if I'm smart, I'll take an hour and a half bath and wait till it cools off and then get the hell out of it. Because then I've done nothing. Except for maybe read a book, but mostly just go under the water, come back up into the water, go under the water. And the thing is I don't actually bathe. Like, I don't clean myself until the end.
Wow.
Because that's when I gotta clean myself. It's too much info.
So you stew.
I'm making a Jackie soup. And by the way, the water is hot. I like it to be almost 102, like close to.
Me too.
Yeah, I like a super hot bath.
And, me too.
Yeah, those sort of community baths that they have in Iceland. I fucking loved those. We went.
Did you go? You went?
Yeah, and we went to three different ones, and they were amazing, and they were hot, and they were full of Icelandic people, and it was delightful. They were full of people who liked to boil themselves in weird silica laced mineral water. So
that's so cool.
It's pretty cool, and you would love the hikes there. They've got all kinds of crazy ass hikes there, where you are on essentially. It looks like you're on the moon. It looks like a science fiction movie.
That's a Louis L'Amour novel waiting to happen. Louis L'Amour wrote some really good. Wrote some really solid books, so I'm
have you
a.
Read any Louis L'Amour?
I have. I read a book he did called The Ferguson Rifle and enjoyed.
The Ferguson Rifle is. I think that that's a second adventure, if I remember correctly.
Yes, I think it is.
It's part of a series. The one that's sitting in this this bookcase behind me. The top row is all sort of kids' books, and mm-hmm. there's a children's novel that Down the Long Hills, written about two kids who get abandoned. On the plains after an attack on their wagon train. And so there's these two little kids. And the thing about Louis L'Amour is that he's one of those guys that have always existed, right? Where mm-hmm. I think of him kind of like Joe Biden, where he's just going to say weird old white guy stuff. But his heart's in the right place. He's just in his own fishbowl. And you're like, that's not ideal, buddy. And I mean, I've been there myself. So it's, I mean, I can't, where you're just like, you're treating people like people almost, right?
Yes.
You're real close to treating them almost as you would treat yourself as a human.
But every children's adventure novel back then was a disaster, wasn't it? Like, isn't that how it works?
Not Amazons and Swallows. Amazons and Swallows is an amazing children's novel. I wonder if I've got that sitting up here. No, I think it's in the other room. But it's essentially about these British kids who are just on a tiny lake, and their adventures could not be more. I mean, it was written in like the 19 teens, so you would think it would be a nightmare. It would either be, but what it was mostly was it was children who were allowed to have their own tiny sailboat, and their dad was like, well, you're not going to be duffers and kill yourself in it, right? You're going to be careful. And they're like, yeah. And then they got to sail, and they were like, I think the oldest one was like 11 or 12, and they got to camp by themselves, and there were four of them, and one of them was like 4 or 5 years old. Amazons and Swallows. It's a great, it's a beautiful
book. I've got to get into it, but there was, that sounds a bit like the Fantastic Five books, which are the, or maybe it's the Fantastic Four. I can't remember what it, it's a British, Enid Blyton, something like that.
Okay.
Wrote this series, a very famous British. I'm sure that there's a British person listening to this, like yelling at me because I'm messing something up. But yeah, it was like about kids who get into a boat and get in all sorts of trouble. Kids and boats don't mix in these books.
Kids and boats mix in these in this books. Amazons and Swallows was given to me by Andrew Salmson. Used to do stand up now. Big hiker. Just did a hiking episode of the Dork Forest not long ago.
I knew that there was a hiking episode of the Dork Forest, and I felt like I had to bring specifically this. And like, you know, I feel like I should tell people what the best slot canyons on Earth are, or at least in the United States or something.
Have you been to Yellowstone? Is there anything in Montana?
I don't think there's anything in Yellowstone, or not to my knowledge, but Utah's lousy with them. Utah's got a bunch. Like, Utah has Buckskin Gulch, which is the longest and most dangerous, one on the planet. The walls in Buckskin Gulch it's 12 miles. It's almost never more than 10 feet wide.
What?
And at the canyon's deepest point, it's 400 feet tall. And
wow.
So a little more than halfway in, there's only one escape route. So if a quick if a quick storm comes through, you're in big trouble. No one's ever died there, but it's a dangerous, it's a hard and dangerous hike. And it's 12 miles, so it's really difficult.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the thing is when you think about how long are you hiking each day? I mean, I think an average hike is usually, what, 3 or 6 miles, right?
You could cover people on hikes, I think, do better than they think, because they're focused mostly on what's in front of them instead of you know, how hard stuff is. And yeah. So on hikes, I've regularly done, you know, 9 or 10 mile days before.
Okay.
But
so
you know, that it's not an insignificant undertaking. Like it's a hard thing to do. Those long hikes, they're difficult.
And do you usually go alone, or do you usually have a guide or a buddy?
I never take a guide, but I never go alone. I almost never go alone. I think hiking alone is a recipe for disaster, no matter what hike you do, no matter how I always recommend people. And also, it's more fun to go with someone, unless you want a specific, you know, set of, unless you want a little bit of alone time.
Right. I suppose who you pick to go hiking with, you don't necessarily want, I mean, the most chatty Magoo that you've ever traveled with, or someone who doesn't want you to mention anything ever.
That's why slot canyons are great, because if someone's, sorry, go ahead, I cut you off.
No, that's all.
The slot canyons are really good, because if someone's too chatty, you're like, hey, let's focus on this bend right up here. You know, like, I don't know, getting the, on any sort of hike, if you want someone to talk less, I think it's a bit of a challenge. And by the way, I'm probably the guy that's too chatty. I'm Chatty Magoo. Chatty Magoo. It's me,
Alan
Jackie.
Zeppelin might be the one who's chatting it up, who's like fascinated. But
I recorded my album live on a hike with a friend who wanted to kill himself. That's basically the,
By the way, it is, just so we know, we are talking with Alex Edelman about hiking and exploring, and it is called Until Now, and it's on 800 Pound Gorilla Records, and Alex Edelman is at Alex Edelman on Twitter and at The Alex Edelman on the Instagram. So, by the way, this Swanson... This Amazon and Swallows book, is that what it's called?
Did I get that right? Yes.
Swallows and Amazons. The author's a guy named Arthur Ransom.
And oh, wow. Yeah. Famous.
Yeah, I think so. And but he's a guy from the early 1900s, right? I think he died in like 1950 or something.
All are. That generation was, so that guy's British, and he wrote a series, Swallows and Amazons, which I've never heard of. Like it would have been a series, right? He wrote these really famous series, but
right.
Like,
and I think there's a TV they made like one of those Disney movies or something, except for they made it in 2016.
Wow.
That I was just reading, and I was like, well, that doesn't sound right. But it was, you know, it's those times when you were a kid. Did you do any hiking or outdoor stuff as a child?
Yeah. I think my love of hiking comes from, living in Israel when I was a kid. I spent a lot of time
there?
I lived there for about 6 months.
When you were a kid, like 12, 10?
It was during the Second Intifada, so it would have been 2001, I think, and so I was probably 11 or 12.
Okay, but before your bar mitzvah?
Before my bar mitzvah.
Okay.
I was really into the natural, like I grew up in Boston and there wasn't a lot of hiking,
right?
But there was a lot of natural beauty in Israel. And Israel has these things called wadis, W-A-D-I. And wadis are not exactly slot canyons, but if they were in the Americas, they would be. They're desert canyons. They don't have to be tightly held together,
I've always wanted to go to Jordan, to the Valley of the Kings.
Egypt is the Valley of the Kings, right?
I thought it was Jordan, but I am always wrong. So
No. I think you must be right. But one of the best slot canyons in the world is in Sikh, Jordan, which is the hike to Petra. First, you have to go through this long slot canyon.
Petra is where the Valley of the Kings is.
Yes, so you're right. That's the Valley of the
Kings. Do you know why? Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Oh.
I don't know if you ever saw that particular little chestnut. My friend, a really good guy named Andy Levitt, went And he also went to Egypt. And this is like 5 years ago. And I have always wanted to go to Egypt and see the pyramids. And every time I've made the plan, there's always been some sort of unrest. But you got to go anyway, I figure, eventually.
It's hard. It's a shame because that is like one of the most beautiful places on earth is Egypt. And it's, yeah, it's constantly in turmoil.
It's up and down. It's a crapshoot. But
Petra, though, yeah. Oh my God, Petra is like the ultimate. So that, yeah, so that is that. And there's this, there are a couple slot canyons in Australia that are insane. And I bet you there's one in, I haven't done a Google, but I just know from people, like there's a bit of a nerddom. There's a bit of a dorkdom around these canyons and the people who go do them.
Right. Where you just tell each other where the one you've done and what they should maybe do. Have you ever destination slot canyoned?
100%.
To Australia? Did you ever do that one? Or
no, I try to make plans. I try to make plans for it. And I tried to get into Petra, but I had an Israeli – I had a stamp on my passport from Israel, and it was the kind of stamp that meant I couldn't get into Jordan.
Right.
And so I didn't go, which is such a shame because Petra is one of the greatest one of the greatest places.
It's insane. I went to Saudi Arabia, and they gave us different.
What was that,
passports.
Jackie? Was that USO? Was that a USO thing?
It was
thing?
Armed Forces Entertainment, like USO, but pays less. And but they gave us different passports. They gave us spanking brand new passports just in case any of us had ever been to Israel. So yeah. It was yeah. So when you renew, you got to go to Petra before you go to Israel.
Yeah, it's a shame because I've been to Israel a bunch. Like, I think it's a real, but you know, like that region is, the desert is really so gorgeous. And like, it gets such a bad rap from cartoons.
It really does get a bad rap. I remember my dad, because my dad was stationed here for when he was in the Marines. And my family likes to join the armed forces and then stay in the United States and never fight in a war. That's one of our strengths. And I guess my grandfather through World War I was at Fort Hood. So,
oh, wow.
Good for him. And but my dad through the beginning of Vietnam was here in 29 Palms, and he used to talk about how beautiful Palm Springs was and how beautiful the desert was and how my mother didn't like it. And he was like, yeah, but look at all the flowers and the thing is the different times you can go into the desert and see these things, I'm sure are gorgeous.
Oh man, there's nothing like it. Like it really is. And also our, this is so rah-rah patriot of me, but I think the best thing about the United States is the national park system. It's very accessible. It's very cheap. Millions of Americans visit every year. It's a very popular vacation destination for people
who are
lower middle income. Yes, it's very affordable, and they're everywhere. And national parks in every state. There are state parks in every state. Mm-hmm. It's a really good day out. It's active. It's social distancing in this time. There's exercise. It's a very healthy impulse. People love to camp. People love to barbecue. It's like
people
a really
like to picnic.
Good.
You spend some quantity time with your loved ones, and I'm a huge fan of quantity time.
I was like quantity time, quantity versus quality.
But the thing is my theory is that quantity time leads to quality time. When I was a kid, my stepmother used to say, "We're trapped. We're trapped in this thing. And at the end of it, we're going to love each other and nobody's going to know why." So,
that's so funny.
It was my stepmother, and she's like, we just have to hang out. And at the end of it, we have to have some, I mean, there will be some good times. And she is correct. Because if she had tried to artificially create quality times, it would have sucked. Because it wouldn't have worked.
I think everyone I've, and that's a big part of this, by the way. It's an adventure you can do with people.
Yeah.
Like, I love adventures to do with people because, you know, my comedy is actually fairly documentary style. Like, my last solo show was about this isn't until now. This is a solo show I was touring when the world ended. It's called Just For Us. I went to a meeting of Nazis in New York City. Okay. And I sat there for like an hour, and then eventually someone's like, "I'm sorry, but like this guy's a Jew, right?" And so like, I like, you know, I like things that are a bit like left of center or active or risky. And I've always, and I always go like,
how did you get into a GOP convention, by the way? just kidding. Emma,
I follow Mnuchin on Twitter. It just happened. I'm just kidding.
Came up. And, it's clearly you are in search of adventure on several different levels. And I don't know in the last 4 months, we've all been hunkered down or staying at home. We're, you know, trying to be safe and not get sick. My brother Russ said to me, don't you wish you had just already had it? And I was like, so that I could have a lifelong lung problem? No, I don't, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what have you gone? Have you done any sort of like drive for a day, gone hiking, drive back?
We've done a bunch.
Like Joshua Tree isn't that far from here, is it?
Joshua Tree, we knocked out in a morning. We left early in the morning. We were back by 2. Like it's an hour and a half from Los Angeles, right. And a legit hour and a half.
Well, that's true. It can be a little bit longer, but certainly not now though, because the traffic is down.
No, traffic is down, and also, you know, there's a great resource if you want little roadside attractions called Atlas Obscura. And Atlas Obscura is great, and it's really good for dorkdoms and nerddoms and stuff like that.
And to find weird kind of local stuff. It's sort of like a Yelp, but for weird things, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so we stopped at these big giant roadside attraction dinosaurs, the Cabazon dinosaurs on the way. And we went to Joshua Tree and hiked the Chasm of Doom and the Hall of Horrors, which is another hidden hike that's much harder to find, and I won't post because that is like I don't have a map that can get you there, but like it really
you'd have to go a couple of times and then have somebody show you where it was.
So probably, right? We lucked into a park ranger, and okay. I asked. That's the secret to every national park: is ask a park ranger. They always know the best places. They live there. They go every day. It's their job.
Yeah.
So park rangers know everything about the park. That you can go, hey, I'm looking for this type of hike. Not too much, not too little. When should I go? Where should I go?
Yeah.
He told us where to go at sunset. We didn't stick around for sunset. By the way, when I went to Joshua Tree. This is 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And we look for the Chasm of Doom, and I can't find it. And this guy sees me rooting around off the trail, and he goes, are you looking for the Chasm of Doom? And I said, yeah, am I in the right spot? And he's like, no, you're about 60 yards away. Follow me. And he took us through the Chasm of Doom. And as he was taking us in, I was like, I would have never found this.
Right.
And I never would have done it without help. Like, it's really
so
hard.
Interesting. So it was you and a friend, obviously, who had gone.
Me and my girlfriend, yeah.
You and your girlfriend had gone together. And then there was a third person. Going into this, something called the Chasm of Doom with a stranger you've just met feels like a trust exercise that I don't know that I would do. I don't have.
Hey, if someone wants to kill you on a hike, I mean, that. By the way, there's another misnomer about these. A lot of these are heavily trafficked now, which is a bit of a shame, but also kind of nice. Like some of these, like the Bridge to Nowhere hike, which is one of the most accessible and adventurous hikes if you live in Los Angeles, is gorgeous and a lot of fun, but it's also been partially trashed because it's become so popular. People are eager to graffiti. And the motto of the Sierra Club is take nothing but pictures. Leave nothing but footprints.
Right.
But people don't, you know, it's hard for people to abide by that apparently. And
well,
like,
and the guy who founded the Sierra Club, I think, was a taxidermist.
Yeah, like there's some real, also he had some real contradictory notions about freedom and independence.
Yeah,
that I think is coming out right now.
He was in many ways a terrible person, but in other ways, not a terrible person. But, you know, leadership comes in all styles. So have you ever been to the Hearst Castle?
I've never been, but I've heard such good things. Is it great?
It is gorgeous, and it is as if my grandmother had inherited $1 billion and decided to throw it at things. It's essentially – it reminds me – I was in Saddam Hussein's guest house, And my grandmother could have decorated it. It was another USO thing. Yeah.
Because
it's chandeliers and gold taps and parquet floors and then
like
also,
Scarface style,
but also crap. Like some of it is real and some of it is glass. Because they ran out of money and he was a monster. So
that's wild.
There was all so the Hearst Castle is exact. I mean, literally, you wander around and it's gorgeous. And there's pomegranate trees, and you're like, they're in season. Can I pick a pomegranate? And they're like, no, actually, none of the fruit is available for picking. And I was like, tell me you were selling this to somebody. And he had zebras and zoo animals roaming free over the land. So he was a bit of a monster, obviously, Mr. Hearst. But he also left Hearst Castle in the grounds to of California. And the Hearst family still gets to stay there. That's in perpetuity, right? Like Lydia Hearst is married to Chris Hardwick.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they get to stay at the Hearst Castle sometimes.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So his Instagram, Chris Hardwick's Instagram, if you go back through it, you're like, hey, we're sitting at the long table that the main Hearst guy, William Hearst, would have famous people come up from Los Angeles. Anyway, but it's
my God.
It's gorgeous though. The property itself is just, and I believe there are hikes. I mean, there you pay to go and tour the castle and stuff. And there's two different full day castle tours because it's so big and dumb. But there are also hikes and stuff, I think, that you could go to.
Wow. I mean, that is pretty cool, no?
Yeah. Well, it's just another example of someone who used their privilege for their own good when they were alive. And then when they died, they're like, nah, I should probably share this, but I don't need it anymore. And there you go. You can have it. And then
that's so wild.
His kids and his grandkids are all billionaires and they're fine. So, I mean, And Chris Hardwick, who did a very funny bit about the prenup that he signed, that he insisted that they sign because he had TV money, and she laughed and laughed. Anyway, so
That's so funny. She's like, bit. Yeah, you idiot. I've got to see it.
I don't know if he's got a new special out, but I saw him do it one time, and I was like, you are a delight. He is also, I guess, was a terrible boyfriend about 10 years ago. And he was in a terrible relationship with, they were both nuts. And hopefully he has grown. And he seems to have. And from what I've heard from friends and
acquaintances. I don't know a ton about him other than that he's always been very, I've always found him to be very funny and generous. So I can't speak.
You can't speak to that. And you know what? I probably shouldn't have brought it up because we're on the Dark Forest, and it's fine. But it's because we're talking to you, Alex Edelman, at Alex Edelman, at the Alex Edelman. Oh, I'll do a lateral move, and then because the thing is, we're getting close. That's not true. We have about 10 more minutes. But what would you? I mean, the thing is you like these canyons and you like to hike. But have you tried to tour the national park system too?
Yes. I mean, the best ones for my money are Zion and...
I've heard Zion's... I want to go.
Oh, it's so gorgeous. But I've also got...
Is it like Yellowstone? Is it like Yosemite? Is it like anything else? What is it?
It's like Escalante. So there's a category of like desert national parks. There's Escalante, there's Grand Staircase, there's Moab, there's Monument Valley, and Zion is one of these beautiful rock formation parks. And I think Yellowstone's a bit more like Montana. Where is Yellowstone? Is it in Montana?
Yeah. It's on Montana and Wyoming together, but I think.
Yeah, but it's a bit more Icelandy Yosemite is from what I hear.
Oh, Yosemite? Yosemite is in California. Yellowstone.
Yellowstone. Yellowstone's a bit more Yosemite.
Yellowstone is just woods. It's just forests and waterfalls and gorgeous.
But geysers too, right? There's geysers. There are hot springs.
That's right. It's true. Yeah, Iceland has volcanoes and geysers. And then it also has this sort of cracked... old-timey, like where the lava's
arid landscape, an arid sort of
right. There's
rock landscape.
Your best bet, if you wish to grow or anything, is to raise sheep and goats. I mean, it is not. It is mostly grazing land. It is. There's not a lot of farm land.
I've always, and by the way, my best national parks things come from people recommending. Like someone told me, oh, you got to go to Fern Canyon. And I looked up Fern Canyon. I've never heard of it. It's in Northern California. Okay. And it's gorgeous. It's a canyon, but the walls are covered in ferns. So it creates this gorgeous effect where you just feel like you're walking through a canyon of plants, like something out of, you know, Avatar or something. It's really, really, really.
Is it like super north of San Francisco? Do you remember?
It's close. It's a 7-hour drive from here.
Oh, and so then, more the middle of the state than the
yeah.
And they call it Northern California, but I would argue that it's Central California.
It is
so because California is enormous.
California is so big, and there's so much in California. There's Devil's Postpile National Park, which is a bunch of basalt columns.
Oh,
there's,
wow.
There's so many, but like Arizona, Utah, and Colorado are where the granddaddies are all for me. You know, I'm dying to go to Narrows, and I'm dying to climb Angel's Peak, which is a very genuinely dangerous one. Where, and if you Google videos, you'll be like, oh, holy hell, people must die here, and they do.
Right.
But like, I want to go to places where there's danger, and I want to take my girlfriend who's only been dating me for a while and doesn't fully trust me. Yeah, no, like it's a.
Well, did you? Because what I did probably 3 years ago is we went to Yellowstone, Mount Rushmore, Crazy Horse.
Oh,
and
amazing.
And it was amazing. If you ever go to Crazy Horse, we did not do this. Did not know about it till we left. Unlike Mount Rushmore, Crazy Horse is owned by the Native Americans. And so you pay to get in, and that's fine. You can also pay, which you cannot do at Mount Rushmore, to take a bus up to the nose. You can stand next to the nose of Crazy Horse.
And, you're kidding.
I regret with all of my heart that I did not pay the extra, literally $15.
The Native American parks that I've been to have been far better maintained than our national parks because there's a sense of pride and you're guided and
it's more well maintained. The Crazy Horse Museum, by the way, is a Native American museum curated by the indigenous people. And it is hilarious, dark, funny, mean, like all the things, and
mean.
It is awesome. It is awesome on all levels. But one of the weirdest things was a collection of cards, trading cards, sort of like playing cards that were sold in with gum in the turn of the 20th century.
So you're kidding.
And they are, of course, horrifying and racist. But there's almost a complete set, or there is a complete set, I forget. And the placard next to it, written by the curators, is these are really cool because they show the people, and they're actual photos. Some of them are photos of real Native Americans at that time, real people. They're not just drawings, but
they are
also caricatures and the dialogue. And at one point during the placard said, "Don't call us these names. These are terrible names."
And, oh my God!
Yeah, and they're just like little nudge, little hint, don't do it. But it's a museum, so we're going to show you this. And parts of these things are important and wonderful.
That's crazy.
And it was so good, and it was comparatively the Mount Rushmore Museum was dumb, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I can imagine.
The thing about Mount Rushmore is you drive up, you see it, and you're like, yeah, that's a mountain with some faces in it. When you go to the Crazy Horse Museum, you have, first of all, that museum experience, which is better than the museum at the Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take a bus to the nose. I will always regret not taking a bus to the nose.
Do you know, I don't have a lot of love for the Mount Rushmore Museum. I don't think it's especially fun, or Mount Rushmore. Like, I have no desire to go, which is a shame.
Not really, because the thing is it is, essentially they broke the mountain, right?
Yeah.
They took something that was gorgeous And Teddy Roosevelt was like, I'm going to need to be. I mean, it's someone's, I read some article about statues and statues and Mount Rushmore. Essentially, they're selfies. They're selfies in bronze, right? Is what a statue is. And was the term that was used in this opinion piece. That statues are selfies in bronze. And that's all Mount Rushmore is. And so statues are dumb. I mean, I get public art. I don't get statues so much anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan.
Yeah,
and it's a weird and it's a weird situation because I appreciate the artistry and engineering feat that it is, but it just doesn't strike me. It just doesn't strike me as anything. Like, and by the way, it's obviously there are some real problematic overtones in taking a mountain. Like, it's really problematic.
From the people.
But,
yeah, from the Black Hills. And supposedly still on their land, according to the reservation documents.
And they don't get money from Mount Rushmore, I don't believe. I don't believe the indigenous folks.
No, and I went to Crazy Horse 25 years ago when they first started it. And so they're doing it, the indigenous people are doing it themselves so that they don't, because the government offered to pay for it.
Wow.
And they're like, no, we're good. We don't need your noses in our nose. And and it's so, but it is an engineering feat. And that's why I went to it. And my mother-in-law's wanted to see it. And so essentially we drove up, we looked at it and they were like, oh, you're right. Because I had seen it when I saw Crazy Horse 25 years ago. And I was like, you drive up, you look at it, the museum is dumb, and you leave. And it was an hour out of your life because you had to drive there. But then you go to Crazy Horse and you spend like 2 or 3 hours and it's beautiful. And you're in the Black Hills where there's amazing, you know, one of the coolest, and this can't be good for the environment, but it's a classic Wisconsin kind of holiday kind of thing. They'll take you on a duck tour of the woods.
You're kidding.
You remember the ducks?
Yes.
They're what they landed the troops at Normandy. Mm-hmm. So you get into what is essentially a boat truck and they drive you through the woods and they break a bunch of trees and then they splash you into the river and they ruin habitat and it's terrible. And it's $26. And
that's so fun.
It's really fun. And it's when I was a child, we went to the Wisconsin Dells. The Dells, I wonder if there's a slot canyon at the Dells because the Dells are... They're dells, right? So they're cliffs, and there might be caves and canyons behind that.
You know, there are some canyons that I've been to where I get the same rush and the same joy, but they're not necessarily slot canyons. Like Purgatory Chasm in Massachusetts is not technically a slot canyon, but it's really fun and has that same feel to it. And there is a slot canyon in Solana Beach called Annie's Slot Canyon, and that's really great. But like,
and that's in Massachusetts.
That's in Solana Beach, California, but Chasm is in Massachusetts. But, like, I've been to a bunch of places that are, like, all I'm looking for is a sense of adventure and a sense of, like, and that's why, like, Mount Rushmore holds no appeal because I'm like, there's no adventure there. But, like, yeah, to be crashed through the woods in a duck boat, that does it for me.
You're right. It doesn't seem super sensitive, but it does seem super fun.
So fun.
And I will say one of my favorite adventure things was I got lost once in the dunes in Cape Cod.
Oh, and sounds so fun.
Literally just kind of stumbling around with my wearing one of my t-shirt on top of my head, pretending I was in Lawrence of Arabia. So my whole thing is whenever I like to go out into the woods, get lost and then not die. And I think that sounds like like. It's interesting. It gives me, like, if there was a time machine, I literally want to go back in time and see old growth forests in Wisconsin. I don't think I could kill Hitler as a baby. I don't think I could go and push Caligula down a flight of stairs. But these are like, I think I want to see old growth forests. So,
whenever anyone says to me they want to go back in time and kill Hitler, I'm like, how would that work out for you? Like, if I did that, it'd just be like a Jew in Germany in the 40s. Yeah, good luck to me.
Austria in the late 1800s, because that's when
yes,
I was born.
That's right.
Okay, so,
but speaking no German. I would speak no German. I'd be
right,
screwed.
And you'd have to find him. Did you ever see the bonus on the DVD bonus extra on Deadpool 2?
No.
Because he goes back in time with the time machine to kill baby Hitler.
Oh, does he? Yeah. I've got to see it.
Yeah, you've got to see it. It's on YouTube as well. By the way, it has been an hour, Alex Edelman. Just so you know. This has been a delight. I have
Thank you so much for having me back.
I want to go. There are national parks that we could just drive. Maybe we could, because we drive up to the Sequoias where Andy's mom lives every week.
So gorgeous. Is it Sequoia National?
Yeah, she lives right next to Sequoia National Park. So
I mean, I'm dying to go. Dying.
Like, it's about 3 hours north of here. So we drive on not every Wednesday, but like once a week, the last couple of Wednesdays we've gone, but different days to just drive up, see his mom, stare at her, have lunch, drive back. Because, we're living in the social distancing time and she's an older lady.
Yeah, you just got to stare at them.
I'm doing the
same with my friends. I'm staring at a lot of my friends.
Yeah, just from 6 feet away and go, hey, awesome. Good to see you.
Yeah.
And so anyway, everybody at the Alex Edelman on Instagram, at Alex Edelman on Twitter. And the album is available now everywhere albums are. Very funny comic until now. He's a wonderful dude. Thanks for doing the show, Alex.
Thanks so much for having me. And if anyone has suggestions on where I should go, please send me a message. I'm always down to hear.
That's awesome. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?